Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening and welcome to Progressive News Network. I'm your host and co-producer, Richard Spisak. We'll be joined in just a minute by my co-producer, Miss Mickey Royce. We've got a very exciting lineup for you tonight. Mickey will be reporting on the Palm Beach County redistricting meeting. We'll have Denise White and Patricia Metro-Patrick and possibly one more guest talking about the Martin County redistricting meeting. Then we've got Susan Smith, a fantastic progressive Democrat, who is going to give us a report on the Florida Democrats. We'll be adding a progressive caucus to the Florida Democratic Party. Big news there. And then a really, really special guest, Miss Gwendolyn Holden Berry, who is a spiritual activist, a progressive activist par excellence, an independent artist, producer herself. Also, she broadcasts a fantastic progressive show called There Be Monsters, and also many other activities we'll have her talk to you about. My goodness, we have quite an exciting time. You know, sure, some people were kind of bombasted by this whole economic argument, or at least economic argument part one, but there's many, many other things going on that you need to be aware of, my friends. One of the first things I want to mention is, in case you missed it, as they so often do, they slip out the bad news on Fridays from the White House. The White House has released the news that they're going to be starting to sell oil drilling rights in the Gulf again. And of course, paired with that news, we learned that there is increasingly more and more leaks in the Gulf. Now, if you caught the news that there was a new leak in the Gulf, you might have heard the official news story out of commercial media that, hey, listen, no problem, has nothing to do with Macondo. It's totally, you know, just tens of miles away. The Coast Guard said, nothing to worry, just move along. However, there's been leaks since March. Back in March of this year, there was a streak of oil 100 miles long, which, my friends, you'll be surprised to know, tested as the same constituents as the Macondo signature. So therefore, yes, it is the Macondo oil site is still leaking. Now, in addition to that, something else you should know is that there is an ongoing protest. For 2 weeks, the Trans-Canada Pipeline is being protested at the White House. And to try to intimidate progressives, they're keeping those people jailed all weekend long when normally they are basically arrested and released. So in attempt to intimidate progressives, they are holding them overnight, including Ms. Hampshire from Fire Dog Lake, Mr. Choi, a gender activist, and many, many other activists have been already arrested in front of the White House. Of course, President Obama and his family are on vacation. Not that we would preclude them having a vacation. Heck, I'm on vacation right now myself. But the important thing is they're trying to remind the president that he is the one who's going to be making this decision. So let him know, let the White House know, you oppose more selling of oil drilling rights in the Gulf. They can't do it right yet. They're not going to do it any better, and we know that the Gulf is at risk, the sea life is at risk, the plant life is at risk. Oh, and by the way, for those people who think that the environmentalists are only concerned about animals and plants, yes, my friends, there are humans who live along the coast, who fish in the Gulf waters, and despite what they've been telling us, Corexit and oil are still present in the Gulf. Okay, another thing you should know about is that there was a big raw food bust in California. It seems that the California food protection people are arresting people who sell Whole Foods. And even when they do this in a cooperative manner where it's individual people buying raw milk and raw food, they are arresting, confiscating, and spilling out raw milk in California. So if you're a person who's concerned about your food, this is an issue for you. By the way, you'll be surprised probably to hear that the Miami Herald has had an editorial in today's paper. You might want to check it out, opposing this irrational, anti-democratic procedure that the legislature has adopted to block, to slow down, to walk slow the redistricting process. So we're going to hear in just a minute from our good friend and co-producer, Ms. Mickey Royce, who's going to talk to us about the Palm Beach County redistricting meeting. Let's bring her on in. Hello and welcome, Mickey.
Hi, Rick. How are you?
Very good. My friends, I want to introduce to you an astoundingly creative, talented progressive, a media star par excellence, Ms. Mickey Royce. Mickey, go right into it. Let us know what happened at the Palm Beach redistricting hearing.
Okay. Well, I went on Tuesday. It was held at Florida Atlantic University at the Lifelong Learning Center, and the capacity of the room was 500. That's the official capacity. And I would say that the room was almost full. And so I think somewhere between 300 to 400 people is a fair estimate, maybe 350 to 400, but certainly hundreds, lots of people. And there were many different people speaking. Some of the names that I managed to write down was the president of the League of Women Voters of Palm Beach County, Joan Karp, and Florence Fidel from the United Federation of Teachers, Linda Johnson of the Florida NAACP, of course, the DEC chair, Mark Ellen Siegel, Corinne Miller of the Florida Redistricting Movement. And one of the things, I mean, they obviously talked about a lot of things. Joe Pishgar last week talked about what went on, you know, where he is. So I'm not going to go over that stuff. But they did, somebody mentioned about the flaws in the software. And I thought it was interesting that this man stood up and said he was from the Teabag Party and that people should draw their own maps and get involved in government. And it turns out that this guy is from Fort Walton Beach. Now, I'm not an expert, but it seems to me that Fort Walton Beach is not in Palm Beach County.
So he just came down there to share his insight then, huh?
Yeah. There were two people that identified themselves as teabaggers, and from my perspective, you could tell about 5 seconds after they opened their mouth that they certainly, they were from some other planet. And the committee chair was the Republican Don, I can't pronounce his name, Gaius. And he kept mentioning that, you know, whenever he didn't like what somebody was saying, it seemed that he would interrupt them. Just what Joe said last week. He said, oh, there's 98 people waiting to speak, but, you know, we have to give them time, so please, you know, finish your comments or whatever. And he interrupted. It just seemed, I can't be sure, but he certainly seemed to interrupt some people before they were done. And one of the people that he interrupted was Pam Goodman, who we've had on our show. She's the first vice president of the Florida State League of Women Voters and also the state redistricting chair, and she was cut off, and they told her they would handcuff her if she kept talking.
Oh, my God.
And the other person, the other person that he cut off was Susan Booker, the supervisor of elections for Palm Beach County, who we've also had on our show. But she stood her ground, and she reminded him that she was his election partner, and she wanted to finish her statement. And so she did, and she's awesome. She's just awesome. So listen to her. She's really, really good. But they were all good. I mean, a lot of people spoke well. They really did. And then there was a couple of whack jobs. But anyway, what she's talked about was that the delaying tactics and all the stuff that they're doing and drawing the actual map makes her job impossible. She went into great detail, and I'm sure that somewhere it must be, maybe, I don't know, she was going to obviously submit those comments to them. And when she finished, by the way, she got a standing ovation from the people in the auditorium.
Well, today's Miami Herald has an editorial about the redistricting process, and they really delineate quite in detail just how problematic the way the process is being done. And they basically point out, this is totally anti-democratic. It's completely opposing the public will. There was clearly a mandate from that overwhelming majority of Floridians. So thank you so very much, Mick, for those wonderful comments and that informative nature. Anything else you want to tell us?
If somebody wanted to see a newspaper article that was well-written about what happened that Tuesday, they could go
very
to
good.
The Town Crier online, because that really was the best. I read all of them, and that was the best coverage, because I was there, and I recognized the truth when I see it, and that was very well done. Town Crier online.
And who was the writer of that?
Oh, I didn't write his name down. Ron, he's the managing editor. Buckley.
Buckley. The Boca Raton Town Crier?
No, actually, it's from Wellington.
Okay, great.
Peter Funk.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much.
You're welcome, sir.
You have a real good day, and let me bring on our next guest. Thanks again.
Okay, okay. Bye-bye.
Bye. And good evening. I bet this is Denise.
Sure is, Rick. How are you doing tonight?
Very good, Denise. Very good. And yourself, how are you?
Quite well.
Well, I think I've got one of your other comrades on here, so hold on. Let me bring them in, too.
Okay.
Give me just 1 second. And who do we have here?
We have Patricia Patrick.
Well, hello, Patricia Patrick. I've got Patricia Patrick and Denise White. This is great. Ladies, tell me about the Martin County redistricting process that you attended.
Okay. I was going to start out by giving you sort of an overview, and it was really interesting listening to your last guest from Palm Beach County because it was rather a similar experience in Martin County. The one thing I would say about Martin County is Martin County has this reputation for being a Republican stronghold,
uh-huh.
as opposed to Palm Beach, which is generally considered more Democratic, but the dynamics were very similar. And I think the legislative committee thought that they were going to come in here and that it would be a love fest because it's Martin, Republican-controlled Martin County, and it was anything but a love fest. I guess they thought we'd roll over and play dead for them, but not so. I would say that about 95% of the people who spoke were angry about the process, and that was regardless of party. Again, it was primarily, I would say, progressive people speaking to the issues, again, which is unusual for Martin County. Like the lady said from Palm Beach County, there were a couple teabaggers there, and you could, you know, they hit their talking points. You know, they did sort of kiss butt with the legislators and the same kind of thing, like saying, go on and, you know, the software's real easy, blah, 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 you know, why, you know, we shouldn't expect the legislators to draw maps first and come out to us. But, hey, I tried the software the night before, and it's not that easy, and I am pretty technically proficient. Worked on a computer for 25 years. So, anyway, again, we had people from a number of counties here. I think most people were probably interested in the U.S. Congressional District 16. And when I spoke, I talked to them about when I looked at the map for U.S. Congressional District 16, which is Tom Rooney's district.
Yeah.
It meets the definition of gerrymandering. Oh, my God. it's a little piece of, like, northern and sort of, I guess, central Palm Beach County. I believe Jupiter Farms is in there. Then it's Martin County, a little piece of St. Lucie County, a little piece of Okeechobee County, Glades County, a piece of Hendry County. So, but it, like if you're thinking of the Florida map, you know, it's got Stewart in it, and then it's also got Avon Park and Port Charlotte and LaBelle. So, you know, what Amendments 5 and 6 said is that the district should be compact, contiguous, and communities of interest. If you look at this map, that's insane. What do we in Martin County have in common with Port Charlotte or LaBelle?
Right.
Obviously gerrymandered so that a Republican would win.
Well, that's right. We call them incumbent protection districts. Let me talk to Patricia for just a minute. Patricia.
So many people who spoke, and there were a number of people from the League of Women Voters, and
uh-huh.
then a number of citizens from the various counties that are impacted, like Indian River, St. Lucie, Martin, Okeechobee, and then some folks also from Palm Beach County. And as far as our congressional district, they were saying, a number of people said, the Treasure Coast, duh, they call us the Treasure Coast. What's the Treasure Coast? It's Indian River, St. Lucie, and Martin counties. Wouldn't it make sense if they were one district?
Yep, you're absolutely right. Let me ask Patricia. If I may. Patricia,
sure.
Tell me, is this the first one of these legislative meetings you've gone to?
Yeah, well, this is the first redistricting hearing that I've ever taken part in, and I was very impressed with it, and I had to say that there was actually very little bipartisan undertone. I mean, we all came off as being very progressive in our ideas and whatnot, but very few people actually announced themselves as belonging to one party or another. There was one gentleman who got up, and he announced that he was a Republican, but everything he was saying was right on along with what everybody else was saying, that we're tired of this gerrymandering and that we want the districts to be fair and drawn accordingly, because, I mean, as you know, fair districting amendments 5 and 6 passed with about two-thirds of the votes in 2010. So that's Republicans, Democrats, Independents, everyone. There is an overwhelming support for fair districting in this state, and it was obvious that the voters do not support this lawsuit that's been brought on by Brown and Diaz-Balart, and that we're tired of how the state legislature is holding up the process with doing the fair districting. There were, however, two young students. They identified themselves, I think, as being political science majors, and they were brown-nosing to the state legislators and basically said that they disagreed with the amendments 5 and 6 and that the districts basically needed to be drawn the way that they are. But I got to say, it was...
Was the black community represented or the Hispanic community represented? And did they make any comments one way or the other?
As far as any minority groups, actually, I don't remember very many speaking.
Denise, do you remember anyone representing themselves as, say, NAACP or Somos Florida or any other Hispanic or African-American groups?
Adrienne Gardner spoke. Unfortunately, though, I did not get to see her speech.
Denise, you were going to say?
I was going to say that the supervisor of elections sent staff, and I mean, it was a black woman speaking, but obviously she was representing the supervisor of elections. And the point that she discussed was how Indiantown is carved up into, I believe it's three different state house seats and two different U.S. congressional districts. So the way it works out, there's 6,000 people in Indiantown, and they're divided up into three different state rep districts. So it's like they put the white folks with us, they put the Guatemalans with another district, and the black part of Indiantown with another district. So really diluting the strength of Indiantown. Not that 6,000 people have a whole lot of strength, but there were many recommendations that Indiantown stay as a whole in one U.S. congressional district and also in a state rep and Senate district.
Well, that does make perfect sense. And the reason I wanted to bring out the racial minority aspect of things is that often the conservatives who run the legislature try to make out that the reason that these districts are drawn this way is not incumbent protection, which is so what is so obvious, but instead to protect minority rights. And clearly, no one who's reporting from some of these redistricting hearings has pointed out anyone making that case. So I think this is another case of misdirection. I need to ask you two ladies to sum up. In your opinion, what is your takeaway from these redistricting hearings? Did you get a sense that there was active note-taking? Were these people, the legislators who were there, were they participating in a productive and constructive way? Or were they, some people reported they've been basically just kind of twiddling their thumbs and looking away?
I caught many of them playing on their cell phones and coming and going in and out of the hearing, whether it be to get drinks or smoke cigarettes or whatnot. They were coming and going, completely looking bored. And then there was at the end where someone basically addressed some of the points that speakers had made, and he came off as very offensive and on the attack of the people.
Yeah, that was State Senator Don Getz. And, yes, he's. I think he's very much aligned with teabag politics. And he, he was very defensive. He was coming back, well, and he took probably 20 minutes of the hearing. So he limited that speakers could only speak for 2 minutes, and then he took 20 minutes to give us all his excuses about why this, you know, why this process was democratic. It was, you know, it was not truthful.
Denise, let me ask you this. You're very active in Martin County politics. I know you're possibly considering undertaking a quest for an office. Were the party regulars, party officials represented there?
There were a number of, there were a number of people there, and they were actually quite pleasantly surprised and came away happy that Martin County is a lot more progressive than you know, the old Democrats who've lived here thought.
Well, that's fantastic. That's fantastic. I'm so happy to hear that. You know, Patricia, I'm so glad that you've become so active in progressive politics. You're a younger person than many of us here who've been at this battle for a while, and I was just wondering if you could give us your take. And it was mentioned that there were some college students there. Did you get the sense they were, you know, future job seekers, or was this what you hear in the younger adult community?
They were completely different than anything I really hear in, you know, sort of the young progressive community. They seemed very, you know, I don't want to just automatically say that, you know, that they must have been from the young Republicans, but they seemed to be very disconnected from the rest of the community, and I was kind of very disappointed that that was the representation of my generation there at the hearing where those two guys, unfortunately, I didn't get a chance to speak. I had gotten there very late and got signed up pretty late to sign up on the list for speaking. So it was just, I mean, it was very disappointing that that was the representation for my generation with these two gentlemen.
Well, I want to thank you both so much. Denise, you know, you're a person with a lot of irons in the fire. I understand you're very active with the Progressive Caucus in Florida as well. Do you want to talk about some of your experiences with that for a moment?
Sure. I'm a director on the Progressive Caucus board. We're really just doing the nuts and bolts work now of trying to put together processes and a platform. I believe, aren't you having Susan Smith on the show later?
Yes, yes, she is a coming up guest, yeah.
All right, well, she's great. She does so much work. She's the president, and she really provides good leadership where we work on a lot of consensus. But I guess what I would say is it's been a very good experience to network with all the progressives around the state. There are progressives in every community in Florida, and the movement is building.
Well, I want to thank you both for these wonderful reports, and thank you for your participation. I know, Denise, we've had you on in the past, and I appreciate your participation. I want to encourage you to do that good work that you're offering the state, and I wish you every success in the future in seeking office. And Patricia, we've got a lot of hopes pinned on you, so keep up the good work.
Thank you very much.
I'm gonna get the young people energized here. I'll get them agreeing with us.
Well, thanks a lot. Thanks a lot. You represented Martin County very well.
Thank you.
Okay. Bye bye.
Bye bye.
Hi, Rick.
Hi there. Bye-bye. Okay. So that was our two appearing guests from Martin County. We should have Ms. Susan Smith on in just a minute. I wanted to talk to you about some other stories of interest. The real food bust out in California is really troubling. You know, in the guise of trying to protect people, here they're taking people who literally signed up to get this kind of access to raw food, and instead, what are they finding? They're finding that they're literally being prevented from eating healthier food. You'd think that you know, you can buy cigarettes in any corner. Why is there a problem eating and drinking raw and organic foods? Well, I think we've got our next guest here. Let me bring her on. Welcome.
Is
Welcome.
It me?
Hello, Susan. Susan, are you there? Hello? Hello, Susan. Hold on. Let's see if we can get you in there. Hello, Susan. Are you there? Well, let's see if we can try to connect her again in just a moment. Meanwhile, I do want to mention that today's Progressive News Network show is being simulcast on the PLAN network as well, the Progressive Leadership Action Network, a fantastic group of active progressives who are working to develop progressive leadership across the country. They published a book this past spring called Fix America. It's got essays from a wonderful collection of activists from across the country, some names that you know, some names that you don't know. All of the essays are geared to focus not just on the problems that we face right now, but instead they are aimed to address not just the problems, but how we might go about solving these problems. What kind of tactics might we use? Okay, we've got somebody back here. Let's bring her. Hello there.
Have you got me on, Rick?
I've got you. Who is this?
This is Gwen.
The charming and talented Gwen. Well, that's fantastic, Gwen. I welcome you so much to Progressive News Network.
Well, thank you very much, and thank you for having me.
Well, it's very our pleasure. Well, I understand that you just completed a broadcast on your show, There Be Monsters. Why don't you tell us a little bit about your show that you just completed?
Here Be Monsters is a it started out as an adjunct to my Florida political blog. And it's part of the progressive group within Blog Talk Radio. And it mainly now is an adjunct to the team blog that I write with online called Roundtree 7, and that's a seven numeral. And it's roundtree7.com. And we're all a collection, a short collection of progressive and a little bit more uber liberal writers.
Oh,
and,
thinking outside the box is my kind of thinking.
There you go. We do a lot of out of the box over at Roundtree 7 and on Here Be Monsters. You'll have to return the engagement and come and speak with us over there sometime.
I would be very pleased to do that. So did you have a guest on tonight?
I had several on. I had several of the crowd on. We were speaking about our subject tonight was about basically, and I'm doing bench-side production, and my little puppy is giving me a little problem with barking, so if I get up and please excuse me. We spoke about a very important topic tonight. We covered what is who owns your words when you it's not even called publishing, actually, when you put your words on a blog, and several people, probably a lot of people who listen to your show, Rick, are bloggers, and especially in the progressive or Netroots community. And basically, you want to know, what are your rights? What are the copyright laws to putting your words or into a team or, you know, of bloggers? What are your rights? And your rights are, basically, and you can find all the links over at Roundtree 7, but basically you are an author and you own those rights. Unless you enter into a deal and get paid or make some sort of an arrangement for some back and forth with the site master or admin, you absolutely own your words.
Well, you know, it's so interesting. The whole copyright issue and e-publishing it's got so many aspects and so many dimensions to it. You know, mm-hmm. and I know that there are a lot of web developers and web producers who couldn't generate content to save their damn lives. You know, they may have technical skills, they may have software programming skills, but you know what? Content is a foreign item to them. And I know web publishers who've been in the business for years who, after taking advantage of writers and content developers in the States, have now done basically torn a page from the big corporations, and now they're exploiting writers and content developers overseas. One publisher in particular,
yes,
I know, who used to hire American writers, now has pieces written in the Philippines and in India.
Okay. You know, this is exactly why we approach this subject, because a blog, aggregate blogging group out of, I think they're in Georgia, that we all used to post at, he has some of the content still of some of our posts, and he's begun to use them as he wishes. And when one of our people takes an old post that belongs to them and puts it online and gussies it up, if you will, dusts it off and puts it up there, makes it more contemporary and applicable to issues in the moment, this fellow trots over and accuses him online in several social networks and all over our own page and his of being plagiarist. Can you imagine?
Oh, I can. I had a discussion. Sure.
It's a good old barn fight here. We got a old bar fight we got going on here. So coming to the awareness of what your rights are with copyright, it's real important, because if you've ever worked as a journalist, if you've ever carried a press card, you know that you have certain privileges and rights as a journalist not to reveal certain, you know, aspects of resource or this, that, and the other, but you don't exactly own your own material there.
Right.
As someone who just comes onto the net and puts their, and they don't call it publishing in court, they call it showing on your blog. I showed my work on the blog, then basically, and you and I know, Rick, that the community of little bloggers all across this state and all across this land and all across this world are developing a community of real news
yep.
that is not being addressed by the PR department that calls themselves the media and the networks
yep.
out there in several countries. It's laughable. But you've got all these folks that are contributing messages, and if they go to work for a team, say, like this one crowd, and they're bullied into thinking that their work is not their own and they have to do as someone is, you know, with their words, well, as a creative individual, that can be very frustrating, and anger and angst and, you know,
sure.
stressful. But what it does is it's there are pariahs like this out there who are entrepreneuring on the backs of a vast new informational network that is being born right now that we're a part of. And integrity and ethics are the most valuable commodity for any of us, you know? And when you get these folks out there who are pariahs, who are feeding off of folks who just want to get their words out there into a wider market, and somebody says, oh, come blog with me and I'll do that, not only they're making money off of you, but they're also retarding your growth and your ability to make more of what you do creatively.
That's right,
so
sure.
It's really quite – so we addressed that issue and, cleaned all the bar stools back and opened the floor up and got to it.
Well,
and
good.
It is a good thing. So
there's so many collateral issues in contemporary politics. You've got the HuffPost issue, where they've been riding on free content for a long time. And then to turn the phrase the other way, you've got where some of these political people, Sarah Palin or Bachman, have been using commercial artist work without their approval and without any compensation. So you find lawsuits from commercial musicians who say, you can't use my stuff. You haven't obtained the rights to use my stuff.
They don't want to be affiliated in most points to whoever's grabbed hold of their song. They don't want to be affiliated. Yeah, I know what you're saying.
And that's absolutely true, too. Let me ask you another question. We've talked about the important publishing rights. Let me ask you about the environmental issues or the justice issues or the anti-war issues that you're focused on in your own work as an activist. What are some of the things on your agenda right now?
Well, basically, you know, I have my own business that I run from home. I have a handmade little company, and it requires a great deal of my time.
Sure.
So mine and my sister's. But what we do is we attend as many of the protests or activist meetings or demonstrations or events that they have that we are able to, which isn't a whole lot. Yet, I can get onto the Blog Talk Radio, or I can get on and blog and give a lot of a lot of time and information to that. Plus, in the last election, I worked very hard for the Democrats and the Progressives. I worked very hard for Debbie Schultz and for, you know, President Obama here. One of my family member, old friend, owns the company Go for Prompter, and she was Obama's prompter in the state of Florida. And you know how important those are to us. She is an excellent prompter, Tracy Hall and Go for Prompter. And she'll be working, again, I think, with Lois Frankel, who is the lady who was West Palm Beach mayor. I'm sure you know who I'm speaking about.
Yep.
And I intend to offer my help to her as much as I can this coming election, because she has come out that she is going to run for the congressional seat of Allen West, which is my district here.
You know, go ahead.
Yeah.
I was just going to say, I know you have a long history of being involved with progressive issues. You come out of the Northeast. You want to talk a little bit about how you got initially involved in activism? I'm always interested in having my guests talk about what took them from, should we say, passive citizenship to a more active role. What keyed you up? What launched you to be an activist?
Well, you know, I have to tell you, quite frankly, I mean, when I was in college, prior to that, I grew up politicians in the family in upstate New York. I grew up campaigning in summers for my Uncle Frank, Frank Horton, who was congressman out of Monroe County up there in upstate New York, Republican, for, over 40 years. The guy knew where the bodies were buried, you know? and he was an influence. Now, this was a Republican whom my mother would call an Ike Republican.
Sure.
He had many Democrat friends, and he was, I can remember, him being involved for like two summers with the interns, Republicans and Democrats, both in creating all of the work, the paperwork that went into putting the articles together to create the EPA.
Oh, my goodness. So, that's wonderful.
And he also was one of the initial starters and pushers for the Whistleblower Act, too. And
wow.
This guy, you know, the Republicans aren't like that anymore, are they, Rick?
No, unfortunately not. They've sort of driven the moderates out. I very fondly remember Republicans like Laurel Wyker, Howard Baker. These were Republicans, Nelson Rockefeller to an extent.
Been to fundraiser when I was a kid. Yeah. I'll tell you what happened to me is I got into school. And, I'll tell you, I switched over
for my first vote was Jimmy Carter. Okay.
Really?
That's where my first vote went. Yes. But I can remember Geraldine Ferraro making a big impression on me.
Sure.
And Bella Abzug.
I was just thinking of Bella. Yeah.
Oh yeah. These gals were huge leaders, you know. Bella Abzug more. The lady knew how to make her point, and she also had a lot of stay. You know what I mean?
You know who she reminds me of? She reminds me of Helen Thomas in a way. She was a no-bullshit gal who spoke her mind.
Oh, yeah.
She was intimidated by no one.
Oh, and it's a shame that Helen Thomas's voice has gone silent. That's just, it's a real shame. But that's the way it goes in politics and PR, I guess.
Yeah, well, there's a very active lobby that made sure that her voice was silenced.
Oh, yes. I'll tell you, there's a lot of activists down here in the Lake Worth area, and I met a young lady through one of my roommates who was a grad student down here. She, all the kids. Who are out at the Night Heron Activist Center down here and working on several various causes here and there. They were the tree sitters there outside of the shifts, you know, pharmaceutical thing with FAU and all of that.
Right.
And Amira she's one of the young Jewish voices, too, and traveled over to NOLA to tell Bibi, Netanyahu, that he was wrong. She's one of those active young dual citizenship young Jewish people who is actively fighting for a dual state and are sick and tired of being, you know, pushed into the IDF for.
Yeah.
You know, it's very big, but I digressed, and I voted for Jimmy Carter. I was active during school, and I've always voted, but I wasn't. You pedal back when you're trying to build a career or whatever.
Sure.
Doing that by following them around, and then basically just fast forward into. Bush territory, 2000. It was outrageous, and it's built for how long? Outrage, outrage, outrage. And so it came up. My first instinct was Hillary Clinton, but I had surgery, and I was recouping, and I started listening to Barack Obama, and I got his book, and I read it. And I'll tell you what, I still say it's one of the finest political essays I've ever read is The Audacity of Hope. It's a fantastic book, but it has nothing to do with the fella in the White House right now. From my
evidently
point of
not.
View, I and that's where I dove right back in full thrust again. Both my whole family going out there and getting the votes and working hard for the Obama campaign. Here in the Palm Beach County area.
Let me ask you a question.
Yeah.
You've been involved, you know, your political history goes back. You spent some time as an active Republican. You spent some time working for Democrats. You voted for Democrats. I think you've called yourself a progressive activist or an uber liberal. Let me ask you, you know, there's a real very profound debate right now that I see my progressive brothers and sisters divided by right now. It seems that there are some who say you got to cut President Obama slack. He's got these teabaggers to confront. He's got a recalcitrant Congress. He's got, you know, this huge debt dropped on his lap. He's got this TARP thing that was literally loaded in as he was, you know, taking office. You got to cut
true.
Him slack. We've got to work together no matter what. We've got to stay the course and support Obama no matter what. And all this carping is counterproductive, and it's aid and comfort to the Republicans. But then you've got other progressives who say, you know, the argument that there's nowhere else place to go, the argument that where the hell else are you going to get some support? You've got the argument that says, you know, we thought an agreement with the Democratic Party. We thought we had a standard bearer for a certain number of progressive causes. We thought we had someone who was going to oppose generic war for generic war's sake and only dive into Afghanistan with both feet. Well, that the dive into to Afghanistan has definitely happened. That promise has been kept in spades. But whistleblowers, which he made an issue about, I heard him talk about whistleblowers, that he was going to support whistleblowers. He wasn't going to prosecute whistleblowers. Well, what do we see? We see more
Bradley
whistleblowers
Manning.
Prosecuted than ever before in the United States history.
That's
we
true.
Saw the behavior of this government, of Eric Holder's Justice Department, which I have to believe gets its marching orders from 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue, oversee the incarceration of Bradley Manning in what can only be termed by international standards a torture. And then, you know, the spying continues. I remember hearing promises about health care, about individual care mandates for American citizens, and boy, he walked that one back big time. So
walked
I've heard both sides of the story, and I know where I fall. I'm afraid I'm an activist who supports policies. I'm not a fan of the cult of personality. But I was just wondering, where do you fall on that spectrum of opinion? I'd like to get your insight on that.
Well, I've been called recently very radical because of the same thing you were saying about, you know, the apologist Democrat side or the apologist progressive side that says we have to go with him. He's the lesser of two evils at the worst end. And at the other end, they're saying, look what he had to contend with. Look what he has been able to do. And if you take a look at what he has been able to do, it's very disappointing on the nuts and bolts of it, let alone the health issue. For me, it became a choice of no, I will not support this president. No, his reelection. I will not. Of course, I support my president of the country, you know, when they're in office, because to not do that would go against my personal grain. As far as just supporting him being the president. His policies, however, I am so against. I am against him even running again. I would like to see a primary held. I would like to see a new candidate because I think that there's no fight in this gentleman, none whatsoever. When the Republicans say we want this, this, and this, this fellow goes in and says, well, we got to have this, this, and this. It ends up every time him coming to the public and saying, well, this is what I've got to have, but then he goes through the back door and gives the Republicans just about everything they ask for and leeway to get what they want in the end. Do I make sense, Rick?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
And it's depressing and demeaning to the people who work so hard for him. And that's why the schism has become such a great gulf amongst progressives. And he actually very early on threw the progressives and liberals under the bus and said, you know, oh, well, that was all very metaphorically. His people said, well, it's all very well to court you while we're running for office. But once we get in here, this is what we do. And I think that he is one of a long line of always getting in office for the last 30 years, corporatist-oriented politicians who are beholden to the corporations. And this is an old song and dance now, 30 years of it. But it has become so glaringly apparent that this president, many of the Democratic senators and Congress people who we voted in are just that you can practically see the lobbyists for the corporations writing the checks or putting the money in their bag. It's just that glaring. And my issue has always been and always will be Mother Earth. I come from the environmental standpoint on all of my politics, and corporations are planet killers.
Gwen, let me ask you this. I imagine that you were greatly reassured when the Coast Guard and BP assured America that everything's fine in the Gulf. Don't you think? Did you take that to heart?
I waited. I watched and I waited. But I knew people. I was on the phone with people and listening to people who every day were out there in all of it. And something felt bad. Something felt very bad. To allow BP to run the whole show, and it looked like it. It hadn't been said, but it looked like it. And finally, it was said, because there was no way to hide it. BP was running the show. We do, Rick, we have the Gulf of Mexico is dead. The bottom of that floor, it's leaking again. It's leaching up out of cracks in the seafloor and out of the larger wells, both Macondo and the Horizon wells. But the thing is that the majority of the Gulf floors, you know, the Gulf seafloor, bathos, is covered in corexit and crude. And that's coming up again, too. And people are dying in Mississippi. People are dying in Louisiana. People are dying in the panhandle of Florida from this. And there's a media blackout on it and a CDC blackout on it. And the only way people are getting any real information is social networks and blogging.
That's, you know, in preparation for tonight's show, I chased stories across the web. I searched in the various cities along the Gulf. The best coverage was on a Long Island newspaper. It was unbelievable. And and when they announced that those thousands and thousands and thousands of gallons of oil just disappeared, you had to wonder just how stupid do they think the American people are?
And then the president comes on and says we've told them that, you know, they've got to come up with this and this, and that's an end to it. And he goes swimming in an intercoastal, you know, beach way, not the ocean. And everybody thinks everything's okay. And I'm going to tell you what, Rick. This guy knew that things were not okay, and he allowed those photographs with his kids to, you know, the tourism of Florida and Mississippi and Louisiana. And basically what he did was, we got people who came down here and took advantage after that of the low-rate tourism schedule that was opened up by this huge disaster. And now these people are taking their children into emergency rooms bleeding from the lungs because these little toddlers were playing in stuff that looked like acid rolling onto our shores. That is unacceptable. That is unacceptable. What President Obama did when he did that was he said to this, to the southeastern community, we've lost our story. Cherie Foytlin is correct. We've lost our story and our voice, because the president basically said that corporations and money were more important than her children. And she's right.
Yeah.
When you do some, so that's unforgivable, but it's become politics. And people say, oh, well, that's politics. Where's our moral compass, Rick?
Well, unfortunately, science, which I completely support and have long embraced as a tactic in this miracle that is our planet, also has been twisted by corporate power. And unfortunately, when science meets corporate power wins again and again and again. Right now,
yes.
The Fukushima reactors are in state that is putting more dangerous radioactivity loose on our planet, and they have no handle at all as to how to deal with it. They've got those rods have melted down to the floor of the reactors. The venting is worse than it was during the heat of the initial reaction. And what there's the news reports that are leaking out. Now, you can only imagine what's really going on. But the reports that are leaking out is that there are increases of stillbirths on our West Coast.
Yes.
So, you know, when I hear, oh, well, that's okay, they're going to open up the Gulf, or we're going to be building new nuclear plants, you know, you got to wonder, how can we build a better planet? How can we build a better planet when the power is in the hands of people like that? Well, I think that people like you and others like you, we together are going to build a better planet. I believe that.
We are. It's just keeping your shoulder to the grindstone. It's really about keeping the messaging going and also keeping heart through this. Because, you know, there are times when you just sit down, and I have seen people and things, especially with the Gulf, and people losing their homes and violence. It's hard out there. And you just sit down and you have a bucket full of tears, and then you get back up and you say, okay, what can we do about this? We keep marching along.
Gwen, I think I've got Susan who's just calling in. Let me bring her on for a couple of minutes. If you want to hold on, you're welcome to. Hold on a second, and thanks so much for what you
called. Sure. Oh, you would.
You'll be back again. Let me tell you right now. You'll be back again. Hold on. Let me think.
Love
I'm going to bring in Susan. Hello, is this Susan?
No, it's Diane.
Oh. Hi, Diane. Let me
well,
go ahead.
Well, actually, I'm a friend of Gwendolyn's, and
hi, Diane.
I'm here to support her and to listen to the show. And my only basic commentary I wanted to make is that, golly, you know, when you talk about this, I mean, really there's no war but the class war. And the ultimate thing is convincing as people lose their jobs, as people have less and less, you know, assets available to them, that, you know what, the government needs to work for us, not for the corporations. And when we talk about the Gulf, when we talk about these things, we have to make it really, really clear to the people that why are we in the press barred from this beach, from Halliburton or whomever? Why are these stories being curtailed while people are dying? Whose interests do they have at stake? We need to make the government work for us again.
You're absolutely right, Denise. Thank you so much. We've got about a minute left. Gwen, let me ask you to go ahead and wrap up for today. Give us a word for today. Give us a thought for today. What would you like to tell the audience?
Kindness. Be kind to one another. We really need it more than anything, don't we, Rick? Kindness.
Absolutely. And it's a generous thought to share. Thank you so much, Gwen.
Thank you, Rick. It was a pleasure.
Okay. You ladies both have a really good night. I need to do my wrap-up, and then we'll talk to you soon, okay?
Yes.
Good night.
Yes. Night.
Good night. Well, friends, this has been Progressive News Network, simulcasting PLAN, Progressive Leadership Action Network. Thank you all for joining us.
There's a better world is to come and tell you why. There's a better world is to come and tell you why.
Want to thank you again. It's been absolutely wonderful. And we'll see you next week when Progressive News Network will bring you more exciting information from progressives who every day across this great state are doing important work that makes this a better world. So thanks so much. We'll talk to you next week. And don't forget to support the sponsors that make Progressive News Network available. Thanks so much, and we'll see you next week.
They used to tell me I was building a dream.
Progressive News Network. I'm your host, Richard Spizak. I thank you also on behalf of co-producer Nick Royce. Have a good week. Keep doing those good things, my friends. Talk to you next week.
Right on the job. They used to tell me I was building a dream with peace and glory ahead. Why should I be standing in line just waiting for bread? Once I built a railroad, I made it run, made it race against time. Once I built a railroad, now it's done. Brother, can you spare a dime?
Good night.
Once I built a tower up to the sun, brick and rivet and lime. Once I built a tower, now it's done.